All right, well, I want to welcome everyone to another episode of the Charity Charge podcast, the Charity Charge show. I'm actually on site today at an amazing nonprofit that we're happy to work with called Friends of the Children, Austin. And I'm sitting across from me is Caroline Page, their development director. Caroline, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, the more and more that I've gotten to know what you all do, it's just super inspiring. And you know, I recently was at a friend's house who's a supporter, Radwood, we'll give him a shout out, and was looking at the booklet that you published of your gratitude report. And so, you know, part of what I want to cover today is, you know, the impact that you're making in Austin. And I think just kind of jumping into that, do you mind sharing with the audience the mission of Friends of the Children Austin and just on a practical level, what it is that you're doing for kids in the community?
Sure, absolutely. Thank you. So Friends of the Children Austin is an organization where we are working with the most vulnerable, highest risk children in our community. And we pair them with a professional salaried full-time mentor from kindergarten through high school graduation. So it's a long-term early intervention to break the cycle of generational poverty. We have been in Austin since fall of 2017, but we're a national organization located in 20 cities. And we started in Portland, Oregon 26 years ago. So we have a national model, a proven method, and we decided to bring this to Austin in 2017. And we're the first and only professional mentoring organization in our community.
And I know you talked about it just a moment ago in your when you're talking about your mission, but can you help define for, you know, people listening a little bit more what professional mentoring means in your own words?
Yes. And that's important to clarify because most people are not used to a professional mentoring model. And when you say mentoring, volunteering is what comes to mind for most people because that's what we're typically used to. And so we have mentors who we call friends, and it is their full-time job to work with a cohort of 8 youth. And so these individuals are incredible. They all have at least an undergraduate degree. They're all bilingual in Spanish. They have at least 3 years of experience working with youth. They're also informed in working with children and families that have dealt with trauma. We provide a lot of training, but these individuals come into this role with a lot of incredibly valuable experience working with the population of kids that we're working with. And they want this to be their full-time job, is to work with these kids. And so some of them have teaching backgrounds, some have social work backgrounds. We have a couple individual friends who've been in the Peace Corps. So they're really outstanding people who are committed to working with youth and to really seeing long-term change and impact by the fact that they're paid to do this. They can spend 4 hours, they do spend 4 hours every week with each of the 8 youth that they serve year round. And then in addition to that is transportation time. They pick up the kids from school, from their homes. They take them on outings. They take them here to our clubhouse space. And we're really focused on data. And so there's a lot of time that they spend in addition to those hours with the kids and the transportation, inputting data on the youth, on the program that we use to inform the impact we're making.
I'm glad you actually transitioned that because, I mean, throughout these podcasts, I'm always learning more and more. And I think what you just alluded to and talked about, taking such a sophisticated approach as a nonprofit, I think is extremely candidly innovative and awesome. It seems to me, like my perspective, that the industry, the nonprofit industry that is moving more and more in that direction. I think part of it is probably driven by people that are going to be supporting your initiatives or supporting a nonprofit want to know, in a sense, like, what's the return? Like, if I'm going to give you dollars and I'm going to continue to give you dollars year after year, what kind of impact are you making? So I'm just curious, from your perspective as like a development director, what kind of feedback or sort of like engagement do you give back to the people that are supporting you to keep, you know, driving to get them to want to be supportive of this? How does it's kind of a long-winded question, but just trying to get your perspective on like being here. I know you've worked at other organizations, Robinhood being one of them, but here at Friends of the Children Austin, like what's your perspective on development here and using those data and that impact to, you know, tell a accurate and really impactful story?
Absolutely. So it's two parts. One is definitely how we're communicating our data out to our supporters and partners and potential supporters, but also understanding what is the impact that we're making on these youth and their families. So we all, both on the program side and on the development side, need to be operating at the highest level and with the highest standards, so we ensure excellence across the program and the way that we're working with these youth and the families, and also the way that we share that out with our supporters, if that makes sense. So from a development perspective, it's important for us to appeal to all types of people. Some people are really motivated by numbers and metrics and more sort of factual stats. And then some people are more motivated by kind of the heart and the emotion around the work that we're doing. So you want to be communicating out both of those things. So we are really focused on data. And I think that's crucial for organizations, not only to really truly understand what impact they're making. And it's great that you're doing good work, but you want to be able to quantify what that means in terms of long-term outcomes. And so
And your model to me is so unique too on that regard, because it's a very long-term approach. And I also think it's a very realistic approach in the sense of you're following, you know, a child throughout them turning into, you know, an adult, as opposed to this, you know, we're going to like volunteer for 3 months at a time and like move on from kid to kid to kid. Mm-hmm. So that, anyway, keep going on. But I think it's just such a cool model. It really is unique.
Yeah, thank you. I agree with you. And it's hard to raise funds for an organization and a mission that you don't feel incredibly compelled by and passionate about. And so I feel so motivated by the work that we are doing and the impact we're making, which makes it really fun and challenging and exciting to be working with the team to raise support and to raise partners and to raise awareness about our work. So in going back to the metrics, we have really high level metrics that we look at, which is high school graduation rates, avoiding becoming a teen parent, and avoiding the juvenile justice system. So those are really high level and are long term. Right now, we're serving 72 kids in second and first grade. And by the end of this school year, we will be serving 112 kids because we're adding an additional cohort of 40 kindergartners. So in terms of with donors, we have to be able to talk about the work that we're doing now at those younger ages and how that's informing those high level metrics in 10, 11, 12 years. And so we work really hard to talk about the number of hours that the friends are spending with the kids and also in communication and contact with their caregivers, the interaction they're having with the teachers. We have 9 core assets that Friends of the Children nationally uses. And so the friends create roadmaps for each of the kids in thinking through what core assets, which are social and emotional, behavioral, also academic, do we need to be focusing on? And on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, they're putting information into our database, which is tracking all of those different focus areas and the time that they've spent and anecdotes from the caregivers and the teachers and the kids, and making sure that we're really, the kids are on the right path to achieve those high level outcomes. Something that we're also focusing on right now is literacy. So many of our kids are behind academically. Many of them are coming from Spanish-speaking homes. And so ensuring that these kids get to grade level for reading and writing is a huge focus for us. And so what we're talking about right now is what are the right metrics for literacy? How do we make sure that we are providing all the wraparound supports that we need to for these kids to make sure that by third grade, they're at grade level of reading and they're able to, because that's when state testing begins specifically. So that's something that we're really focused on, and how do we report that out?
It does. No, it's great. I mean, I think that from my perspective, you have a very different model. I mean, one of the things actually on the most previous podcast was with who you know, Catherine Engelhardt Kronk from Mission Box. One of the things that I talked about with her, and candidly, she really brought up, was how tough it is to continue to engage a donor and a supporter. And typically, you know, this is just a macro statistic in the nonprofit world, but donor retention is about 50%, meaning, you know, someone gives to you 1 year and then the next year they don't give to you again. And a lot of that's just the challenge of a nonprofit organization having the tools and the wherewithal to be able to, you know, communicate and keep that donor engaged. And so what I think is so interesting about your model is this, it's almost like the development side, in my opinion, I'm curious your take on this, is almost built into it in the sense of, if I'm a donor and I'm supporting Friends of the Children Austin, I am believing in your mission. If I'm going to write you an initial check, and like, it's understanding your mission, which is, this is a long-term play. Like, we're going to start with kids, you know, as young, you know, starting in kindergarten and follow them all the way through. So I just feel like if I was, you know, a supporter, that I would immediately be buying into that long-term approach. So it's like, well, I want to give every year, you know, because I want to see this through.
That's what we hope.
Right.
That's what we hope. I think that every nonprofit struggles with donor retention. And people do, individuals, companies, foundations have seasons of giving. You know, they're really focused on a mission for a certain period of time. And maybe it's not that they don't care about you anymore, but they're focused on something else. So it is crucial to be continuously engaging all of our supporters and prospective supporters in the work that we're doing, and really ensuring that they do feel connected to the mission. So I agree with you that I think that our organization, and I don't take any credit for this in the beginning, because Nancy Pollard, our executive director, and Rachel Arnold, our board chair, are the reason why we launched in Austin in 2017. And they did a really fantastic job of finding a group of people who were willing to fund this from the start without anything even being built yet, and they made 3-year pledges. And so we are actually in our third year of those 3-year pledges. And so what we're working on this year is making sure that we retain gifts and that we find individuals who are gonna commit to new 3-year pledges, because we wanna make sure that as we grow as an organization, we have an idea of where we are with our funding, so we know that there's sustainability. We know that we have the capacity to enroll a new cohort of kindergartners and continue to serve the youth that are already enrolled in the best possible way. And so I think that there's a lot of things that we're trying to do from a development perspective that might seem like common sense, but are not necessarily common practice. So.
And with that, yeah, I mean, one of the questions, you kind of beat me to it, I'm now pulling up, we were riffing before very organically, but I did have some, you know, questions out, and you kind of beat me to it. And one of the things I was going to say, just in your experience of working at a variety of nonprofits, you know, what advice would you give to someone that wants to start a new nonprofit? And I think the perspective that you shared, that Nancy and Laura had created, of just having some forethought of, hey, if we're going to do this and we're going to do it right, we need to make sure that there's we find people that can really get behind it and see the long term to be able to initially call it what you want. I mean, I would think of like endowing it initially for the first few years, but like really being able to get you know, get started and get going and not be stressed out about you know, on a continual like 12-month cycle to raise, you know, next year's budget. Kind of answering it for yourself, but yeah, I mean, I guess in so many ways, like, the question really is, yeah, what do you think are some of the first things that someone thinking about starting a nonprofit should do?
Oh, that's a big question. I think,
or even from a development perspective,
yeah,
really.
From a development perspective, we talked about this. I've talked about this at previous organizations I've worked with. We talk about having a sustained sense of urgency. So there's always a need, and we can be doing really well, fiscally, and feel really healthy about the state of our finances, but there's always a sense of urgency because you're always wanting to ensure that there is that runway and opportunity for growth. And so I would say that some things that are really basic are thanking people, letting people, showing gratitude, expressing to people how appreciative you are for their support, for individuals, for companies, for foundations, also for other nonprofits that we're partnering with, that are connecting us to other people that we should be talking to. I mean, I think something that nonprofits struggle with is a sense of collaboration. And that's something that we at Friends, and I would hope for other organizations, are always thinking about: who can we be partnering with, who's doing really great work, and we're doing really great work, and how can we work together to more positively impact the community that we're serving? And so I would say, before you start a nonprofit, is talking to people in the field, organizations, individuals who are doing similar work or working with similar populations, and understanding what's already happening in the community. And that was something that Nancy Pollard and Rachel Arnold did early on, was they heard about this model, this national model of Friends of the Children. They read the book by our founder, Duncan Campbell, which I can share with you. It's a wonderful read.
Awesome.
I highly recommend it to anyone. Learning his story, hearing about this model. And they talked with a lot of different people in Austin and said, is this already happening? Is there already something that's happening with professional mentorship? Because if so, we want to support that. And the answer was that there's not anything like the model of Friends of the Children. And so that was where that decision was made to bring it to Austin. And so it's really important to get people excited, get people motivated, to educate them about the work that you're doing, educate them around the issues that you're working to solve. I never want to make assumptions about what people know about poverty in Austin or what the families that we're serving are struggling with. So trying to engage people in that conversation. And also hearing from individuals, what are you interested in? What boards are you on? What do you care about? What is your family's philanthropic priorities and mission? And so hearing from people as well is important from a development perspective, in addition to just talking to them about the work and trying to seek, their support.
And even as you say all that, I mean, what's running through my mind and my perspective, kind of summarizing it as well, is very much, it's clear to me that when Nancy and Laura were kind of ideating this and
Rachel.
We can't edit it out, so it's live here. Excuse me, with Rachel and Nancy. They clearly, I think, looked at a few things. I'm comparing it to like a business, not actually in a positive way. It's like they recognized, they saw a need. They assessed the market to understand who else is serving this need and in what ways. They then realized that there was a model out there that has had success, in other communities and other cities, that they could essentially, not that it's franchised, but like take those best practices and put that in Austin. But then they also looked at it from just the pure bottom line and like the economics of it and said, well, what's this gonna take? And that was when they were able to probably put together the initial kind of, so to speak, forecasts and budget and say, all right, well, we need to go out and find people that believe in that this need needs to be solved and this is the way to do it, and initially get that kind of investment or something, how a lot of people think about starting a business. And I think that I'm really appreciate hearing that, because look, I mean, in the span, I'm obviously talking in macro statistics, but of 2 million organizations across the US, there are some that are itty bitty and are filing 990 EZs, and there are other organizations that are billions of dollars in revenue. But to me, I'm always wondering, what's the difference between the ones that every year are barely making it and filing that 990 EZ and the ones that are sustainable and making an impact and also not completely stressed out, because I think that so many people are operating nonprofits. I mean, I can see it when there's a difference between still the founder-led organization that's 10 years later and they're still doing the 990 EZ, And my heart aches for them because I know that their mission is pure and like they're doing it for the real reasons, but they just don't have the fundamentals like around it from just the pure call what you want, but like a business side. When I walk in here and I meet the rest of your staff and I see the facility you have and then the impact and look at the gratitude report, it's clear that there was forethought in how are we going to do this and how are we going to do it effectively. So it's really refreshing. Compliments to you and your team. And I'm also hopeful that, you know, people that listen to this have some perspective of what they might do if they have an idea for a nonprofit. What do they do before they start?
Yeah, definitely. And I think I appreciate that. I think that it's so important when you're starting something to think about all those pieces and to also find a group of people, which Nancy and Rachel did such a great job of doing, who felt really committed to Friends of the Children for a number of reasons. And beyond just the fact that Nancy asked them or Rachel asked them, you want to utilize your relationships and your network, but you also want people to come on board because they really care about it and they see the outcome it's going to make in our community and how it's going to positively impact our community. So both from a nonprofit partner perspective and from an individual donor base, it's important to have that established before you even start. And something that the national board for Friends of the Children mandates that in order for a new location to start, that they have to raise 3 years worth of funds, which I think is fantastic because we can't say that we're going to commit to kids for 12 and a half years and only have funding for a year and not know where the funding's going to come.
Do you watch The Office?
The next year. Yes.
It's reminding me of the Scott's Tots episode.
Oh, yes.
Where Michael like pledges when they're like, whatever, in second grade to fund their college and then they bring him back.
Yes.
It's like, you know, whatever it is, 10 years later.
Yes. Like, we do not want to do that.
You can't do that.
Yes. No, you have to, you can, you know, and we feel, listen, working at a nonprofit, running a nonprofit, fundraising, running the direct services and the program, whatever it is incredibly hard work. And we feel that responsibility of the youth and the families that we're serving. And that's what compels us because we have said to these kids and we have said to these families that we are going to navigate life and adolescence with these kids and we are not going anywhere. We as an organization are not going anywhere. So it's really important that our standards are really high, that we're striving for, we talk about this a lot, excellence both from the program direct services side and from the development, marketing, communications, operations side as well. And I also think something that we've hopefully done a good job of is also finding a group of donors who don't already feel too tapped and pulled in so many different directions. That's something that every nonprofit struggles with, is particularly in a town like Austin, which at the end of the day is still kind of a small town. I grew up here. Shout out to native Austinites.
You literally are reading my mind because one of my next questions was, what do you think is perhaps unique to Austin compared to other cities?
Yes. So
with respect to, you know, the nonprofit world,
yeah,
and donors and such.
So I think that's something we talk about a lot. And we talk about with people is, how is Austin different from other markets? One is, it's just a lot smaller than a place like Houston or Dallas. And it's hard to even compare it to those cities, but we're close and we're in Texas. And so you look at the wealth in Dallas and Houston and just the sheer number of people, and it's significantly larger than Austin. So that's one challenge. Another is that Austin's growth is just booming, and so there's so many new people coming to Austin all the time, which is great. And I think there's a lot of people who are resistant to all of the change in Austin, and I think there's good change and I think that there's bad change, but we are changing and that is the reality. And so I sort of am of the mindset of like, you got to get on board with the change that's happening and ensure that that marginalized populations are not just continuously sort of pushed left out of this like growth and change. And so I think a challenge that our city has is making sure that people who've been here for a long time and people who are new really are engaging the community. I think there's a lot of fantastic people in Austin who've been here for a long time and are really connected to this city philanthropically, you know, from a business perspective, socially. And so you want to see that new people are also have that same mindset of really not only just coming here and utilizing our great city and living in our beautiful homes and high rises and all the beautiful outdoor green space that we have, but supporting the communities that are living in poverty, that are struggling. That's something that is definitely a challenge and an opportunity. So there's wealth in our city. There's plenty to go around. It's just finding people who maybe aren't already connected to a lot of other organizations and making sure that we're all supporting this great city.
What are some practical things that you're doing to reach more people, new people, and bring them kind of into like the top of the funnel, like get initial awareness of your mission?
That's a good question. It is a hard thing to do. I mean, something that we say to everyone we talk to is if you could tell at least one more person about Friends of the Children, even if you don't give us any money, that would be a win, because we really do want there to be continued brand awareness, and we're new, and so that's something that we're working on.
If you're listening to this podcast, you should tell one more person about Friends of the Children, Austin. We're going to do that a little bit here.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Yeah. I think that trying to tap into companies where we have someone who is excited about the work that we're doing, is already supporting us, how can they sort of infiltrate?
I'm curious on that, actually, your just experience. I want to shift gears a little bit just to talk macro, so don't feel on the spot about specifically answering for Friends of the Children, but just your experience with other organizations and your, you know, just general knowledge of working in the industry. Like, what's the general sentiment when someone that, you know, works and represents a nonprofit like knocks on a company's door? Do you find that they're receptive and open? Do you find that they already have initiatives that they care about? Do you find that they're always looking for new causes to get their employees engaged with? Like, what's your sense of kind of corporate philanthropy in Austin, but also I know you're in New York, so like, how do those differ?
Yeah, so Austin and New York, very different in terms of corporate philanthropy, I will say. But I think overall it really varies company to company, and that is what can be a challenge, is not necessarily knowing what that company's focus areas are or strategies are. And I think that's something that a lot of people are really trying to help corporations have a strategy for philanthropy, because you would actually be surprised by how many companies that you might see as a large corporation that does not have a real clear focus on philanthropy. I do think that it comes from the top. So if there's leadership at a company where those people serve on boards, they're communicating to the people sort of below them that philanthropy is good for business, giving back is good for business. It's not just for PR, but it really does positively impact your bottom line. I think that when the leadership is communicating, that's huge. And that was something that I learned a lot in New York, was seeing some of the Robinhood board members. They were really big leaders for these huge companies that they were running, to make sure that the people who worked at that company also cared and were finding the group that they wanted to serve on the board for, or that they wanted to commit to. So I think it really varies. Some companies have clear kind of buckets of support, right? Their focus might be homelessness, or it might be children, or it might be STEM. And so doing the research to find out what those focus areas are, and if it's not connected to your nonprofit, then you should move on to the next company, right? I think that having any introductions to those companies from our board members, from our supporters, where they can really connect us to the right person there, is hugely important. But I will say that corporate philanthropy, I don't want to speak for all nonprofits, but it continues to be a huge challenge. And most of our supporters are individuals right now, and we're really trying to focus on how can we grow corporate philanthropy. But it takes...
I want to ask you a question on that. So this is something that's just on my mind, I'm curious about. If you look at just macro statistics of giving, I'm ballparking here, but approximately 75% of all dollars are from individuals. So why focus on corporations? Is it about the dollars that they have, or is it that you can, you know, have a company has dollars that they can give, but it's also that can be a leverage point to educate their employees who are individuals and part of that 75%. Is that part of the strategy, or is there a different reason why getting dollars from corporations is important versus just focusing on individuals?
Great question. I would say that, at least at Friends, Austin, we have focused more heavily on individuals for that exact reason, because you know, you can sit down and have coffee with an individual, and you can have lunch with them, and you can really talk to them. And sometimes it's harder to sort of get in with a company and really get that time to talk to them about your mission. Mm-hmm. But you're exactly right that it's important. First of all, it's important to diversify your revenue streams regardless. So you want to, from a funder's perspective, from a 990,
It's a great answer.
Budget.
I know you're happy here, but if this was a job interview, you're hired.
Thank you. Well, this is what I do, so hopefully I have good answers for it. But
Zing.
Is making sure that you're seeking support from individuals and companies and foundations, and if there's government dollars available for your work, that as well, and not feeling like you're too heavily reliant on any one source.
I'm actually jumping in, but you're getting me excited now as I'm visualizing and thinking back to the gratitude report. One of the things that I thought was so interesting was the level of support that your board provides. So can we jump there for a second to talk about the strategy here and like how the board is supportive and like how that fits into your overall kind of fundraising model and obviously to deliver the impact?
Yes. So I will start and say that we have a fantastic board, just an outstanding group of individuals.
Can we give a shout out? Ryan Atlas is on the board,
yes,
right?
Ryan Atlas.
I want to give a shout out
to
Ryan Atlas.
Yes.
He was the one that initially introduced me to Friends of the Children. So
yes,
and yeah, Ryan, we'd be remiss if we didn't do that.
Yeah, Ryan's been a great connector for us, as well as all of the other board members as well. And he's it's great. Also, he speaks so passionately about our work, which is fantastic. So yes, Ryan, shout out to you. Our board has made a commitment. We created a strategic plan last year. So we're in the second year of our strategic plan. And one of the goals was for the board's giving to increase steadily to cover a really large percentage of our administrative and operating costs, so we can talk to donors about how their funds are going directly to our programming. That was something, so Robinhood, which is a poverty fighting foundation in New York, for those who are not familiar, I worked there for a while. The board covers 100% of all overhead costs, which is millions and millions of dollars. Everything from events to employee salaries, everything. And so I saw how powerful that messaging is to donors when you can say 100% is going to the programming. So this was something that conversations were being had even before I came here about talking to the board about covering a large majority, if not all, of operating costs. So that's something that they're on board with. It's something that we communicate with potential board members about wanting to make sure that people really understand what this commitment is, both financially and of their time. And I think that, yeah, we're really excited and grateful for a board that's totally okay with that and wanting to support a majority, if not all, of our operating costs.
And I think I'm really, the more and more that I sit down with you, I mean, the dots are starting to connect of why you're having success. And I think, you know, we talked about before of the foresight of the founders, you know, trying to figure out like what's the need, how to get it initially funded, what are other models that are working, and then it's also taking this aspect of like how do we have a really strong board, which again just seems so critical, and I see a lot of organizations that fail to have those parts. So it's just clear that it's no one thing I think that goes to help make success, but it's doing a lot of, it's doing a handful of things right, and then the puzzle pieces come together to have something really incredible about, you know, what you're doing here for the community.
Well, and it's about the team. So everyone on our staff, everyone on our board is outstanding and is operating at a really high level. And it's the community that you're building, the staff that we're building, the board members, we have multiple advisory councils. They're also an incredible group of people. It's ensuring that we have this outstanding team that's all working towards the same goal, because none of us can do our jobs if we're not all operating at a really high level. And so from a development perspective, we're wanting to achieve success and also working directly with our incredible friends, with the program director, with people working in operations, to where we're all working together and knowing that we're all working towards the same goal, which is changing the trajectory of the children's and families' lives that we're serving.
On a practical level, because I'm always trying to figure out at Charity Charge, how do we get better at both engaging our staff and like getting the most out of everyone that's working for us, but also then our community now, like we have individuals that are consumers that are use Charity Charge to fund whatever nonprofit of their choice. We naturally have clients like Friends of the Austin that are using it, you know, for their corporate purchases, and then we have businesses that are using it, and I have also a small advisory board. So I have different pockets of like stakeholders, constituencies, et cetera, which is interesting how you articulated that. I'm just curious, from a staff perspective, what's the type of just practical cadence? Even starting with your staff, like, do you have like a stand-up meeting every morning? Do you guys huddle once a week? Is it once a month? Like, how do you all regroup? And then at what intervals does the board get together? At what frequency, just on a really practical basis?
Yeah, good question. So, you know, every group handles this differently. And I do think it's important to talk to your team and find out what works for people. From a board perspective, they're all volunteers, right? So we want to make sure that our cadence works well with them and they're not feeling like we're asking too much of them or even too little of them. So our board meets every other month, which seems to work really well for our group and seems to be what the board wants. And we really try to run the board meetings. And I say we, Nancy, our executive director, and Rachel, our board chair, works hard to run
the board.
Not Laura. Not Laura, no, okay. Rachel Arnold. Works hard to run the board meetings in a way that is really engaging and impactful to our board members and updating them, being really transparent about successes and challenges, engaging them in the program side of things. And so everyone just continues to remember the mission and the work that we're doing. From a staff perspective, our friends they're out of the office most of the time because they're in the schools with the kids that we serve. They're out at parks and at fun places like the Thinkery or different sort of enriching, doing different mm-hmm. enriching activities like that. And sometimes, and often they're here at we call it our clubhouse. We're sitting in our clubhouse right now, which is a wonderful, warm, inviting space for our kids. So they're out so much, so we have monthly all-staff meetings to gather everyone together, and we really prioritize that, and people need to be there. You know, I'm not scheduling other meetings during that time because it's just once a month, and so we can have that time to really share what each of us are doing. And then our sort of office team, which is our development team, operations, you know, program director and executive director, if you saw where we sit, we all sit very closely to each other, so we're in constant communication. And there's openness and transparency. And so we all have, you know, we have weekly check-ins with the people who we work with really directly, but there's just constant communication. So that's the way that works for us. And then for our advisory boards, we typically get together with them twice a year because it's a group that it's a lower lift in terms of time than our governing board of directors. So we get together with them twice a year, but then there's a lot of communication that happens with those individuals ongoing. We have committees on the board, so the development committee gets together kind of at off times that the board's not meeting. So we're really, you know, there's conversations that are happening all the time with individuals about how they want to be supporting us, what questions they have, how they're engaging with the work that we're doing.
It's really interesting to think about. And like just, I mean, I play it through. Yes, I have worked in a nonprofit, but very early on, you know, kind of out of college, my whole experience has really been, so to speak, public benefit corporation, for-profit, entrepreneurial. It's just interesting to learn about kind of how things compare and contrast. But I also think for nonprofit organizations, you know, there's just a lot of different stakeholder groups that you pointed out that can differ than for-profit. So I'm always trying to uncover, you know, the different nuances and stuff. So no, yeah. I appreciate sharing that. So kind of closing question, you know, if you could go back to when You were initially kind of graduating college and just like put yourself in the mindset of a 22-year-old graduating college, wants to go into the nonprofit world. What kind of advice would you give to them?
I would say it's going to be really hard. Two things. One, I think it's important for people to realize that you don't have to work at a nonprofit to do really good things for our community, right? There's a need for everyone out there, for people to work at for-profit companies and to be able to give to nonprofits. So, but to someone who is wanting to work at a nonprofit, I mean, I think it's important to really closely evaluate the organization and make sure that it's aligned with your values and with how you want to be spending your time. You're going to work really, really hard, but it's completely rewarding. I cannot imagine working at a place, whether it was a for-profit or nonprofit, that I didn't feel so convicted by the mission of that place at the end of the day, because you spend a lot of hours at work and you want to really care about and admire the people who you're working with and the mission. So I would say that, like anywhere, the people are really important. So who are the leaders of that nonprofit? Who will you be working with directly? And do you feel really good about working with those people? And then it's important to look at groups, you know, 990s and kind of their reports and make sure that there's a level of professionalism and seriousness and transparency about the nonprofit.
I love that point, actually. I want to like suggest to anyone, I think that's such a practical point, is that, you know, when you're going and you're interviewing at a for-profit company, I mean, unless it's a publicly traded organization where you can see all their financials, you really don't know what's going on. I mean, they might be presenting the best thing possible, hire you, and 3 months later run out of cash and have to lay you off or shut the company down. I think that's actually such a practical point. I'm really glad you brought it up. It's like, for anyone that's not realizing that, you know, or for the 22-year-old, all nonprofit financials are public record, and you can look up on places like GuideStar.org for free. You can pull financials on any organization, I mean, basically of any size. You can get a sense of what their budget, the revenue, expenses, what their leadership team, you know, salaries are, everything. So you can kind of go into it with open eyes.
Yeah,
and it's really practical.
I would say definitely. I think that's hugely important. And even the younger that you can start doing that at a young age, start thinking about sophisticated philanthropy is really important. And at the end of the day, working at a nonprofit means having the flexibility and the willingness to jump in and help the team. And there's no is not really something that people say a lot around nonprofits. You really have to be okay with, you know, saying, oh, that's not part of my job is not a thing that goes over well at a nonprofit, because you really do want to be jumping in and supporting the people around you, because you're often running a lean team and there's a big need for flexibility and adaptability and kind of a team spirit mentality. And so I would always want to work at a place where that was the culture and the people were really jumping in to help one another, knowing that you all have areas that you need to be focusing on, but you have to wear a bunch of different hats. No one is above anything. So I think that's important for a 22-year-old to know, is to be willing. And that's how you're going to learn. I've learned a ton from the organizations that I've worked with, and it's because I was exposed to a lot of different pieces of those organizations too.
I love it. So Caroline, tell from people listening, how can they find more information if they want to get involved? Where would they go?
Yeah, so you can go to friendsaustin.org and find out more information. We have a website, we've got our gratitude report up there that you were referring to, and got great videos, and so that's a good resource for people.
That's awesome. Well, for everyone listening along, thank you so much. I'm sitting here with Caroline Page, Development Director, Friends of the Children Austin, friendsaustin.org. Thank you so much to everyone in our community for continuing to listen along to the podcasts. I want to also give a final shout out to Lucy O for her support and giving us that awesome 5-star rating. Thanks so much.